Yeah, here we go. Welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg. Today's guest is my friend James Silvis. This dude is a mindset coach. He is an Iron Man. He's a good dude. He's a big heart, knows a lot. We talk about how to change your life in terms of doing hard things, how to push yourself to your limit, and what happens on the other side of those limits. He talks very pragmatically about steps that you can take today to improve how you see yourself, the actions that you take towards your big dreams. We talked about what his experience was like doing the Ironman, how he trained for it. He talks about doing a 61-mile walk around Las Vegas, laying on the sidewalk in the middle of the night, can't move his body, yet somehow finds the courage to continue. Lots of inspiration and motivation in this one, as well as a variety of tips that are really useful, super practical, that you can use today to help reshape your identity and become the person that you need to be for your wildest dreams to come true. I'm really excited about this one. Follow James on Instagram. You can check his stuff out. He's brilliant. Enjoy the episode. All right, man. The recording device is functioning. We are officially having a podcast.
Oh, brother. It's official.
It's official. We're doing it. Welcome, James Silvis. How do you say your last name? Silvas?
Silvis. You got James it right. Silvis.
James Silvis, yeah. Welcome to the podcast, brother.
Yeah, dude, Jeremy, Ani, dude, it's an honor to be here. I've been following you for a while, and we got connected through a mutual friend. And just based off of our first call, I'm like, okay, this is a guy that I can vibe with, that I want in my tribe, that I, you know, just support what he's doing. So I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, man. I think I even said to you, I like mimicked reaching out into the screen of my laptop and be like, I'm you taking
I felt
you.
It.
Yeah, I will choose your heart and you will now be in my friend group.
We're I specifically remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I hung up the call and I was like, that was a weird thing to do, that guy, since I just met him. But yeah, I think sometimes you just meet people and it's the same energy, same kind of purpose or path, and it just clicks, right? And so we talked and I was like, you should come on the podcast and we can just vibe. I want to hear more stories.
Yeah, no, it's 100%. I think the more work you do on yourself, like inner work with emotions, with just clarity, the faster you recognize those people and the quicker you make decisions on whether you want them in your life or whether you don't.
I think we talked about that, how I feel like as I get older or a little bit more confident or a little bit more tuned in, I'm much more sensitive to very subtle energetic shifts in people that I meet, where it might be a 98% yes, but in the past I would be like, that's cool, 98% match, game on. Whereas now I'm like, that 2%, I can't put my finger on it, but there's something that's a no, so it's a no.
Yes. Yes,
anyway,
100%.
You feel like 100% yes, my man. So those listening who have no idea who you are, who have never heard of you or what your work is about, how do you describe yourself?
Yeah. So first off, I've never been a person of labels because I just don't believe in locking people into one thing. But if I had to give myself a paragraph or a short description, I have always been the type of person that loves doing things differently and really trusting in doing things your way. You know, like there's always a way to get something done, and there's multiple ways of doing it efficiently. And the best way is your way. And so I love challenging myself. I love putting myself in situations where I don't know if I can complete something or I feel really uncomfortable during the process of it, because it teaches me where I can level up. So I'm sure we're going to get to a lot of, you know, things that I've done recently that I've challenged myself. But when I find myself in situations where I'm like, why the hell did I put myself here? Or, oh man, my body's like shutting down. What am I going to do? I love those moments because I know right after those moments is where I level up 100 times. And when I get to those spaces and I go through those hard conversations, I develop an emotional resilience that I then can hold space for other people, and I can transfer those emotions to other people. So I feel like I add more value by challenging myself first.
Like finding that edge and just staying there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love helping people break through limitations and realize that there's greatness inside that they maybe just forgot or they didn't know was there.
Do you have a framework or a go-to question or two that you kind of fall back on to start that process? I'm thinking in terms of like if someone's listening right now and they're like, oh yeah, limitations. Awesome.
right
now, yeah. I'm interested in my own. How do I dive?
Yeah, here's a question. A question is like that I would ask is, what's something that you deeply desire that you always talk yourself out of? You know, like maybe it's like, let's say you've never made $100,000 as an example, and you're like, I want to make $100,000, but I don't have any business ideas that could generate that, or my family's never made that, or my job only pays me 50,000, so I guess, you know, it's going to take a lot longer, or it's probably not possible. Like, then you start the logical thinking of using your past to recreate the same future rather than creating a future of abundance and stepping in that way. So I would start there and kind of go backwards. That would be a first question.
I like that. It's about the sort of subtle limiting beliefs or stories that we tell ourselves to justify staying small, staying comfortable, not pursuing the edge. Might be like, oh, I don't even need $100,000. I don't need to be greedy. 70 grand is fine. I'm okay.
Yeah. Research shows that happiness and money correlation stops at 77,000. So yeah, that's right. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like the awareness is a first step, getting curious about what's going on inside your head, inside your heart. And then sort of the way I would approach the next phase would be to actually confront those stories in some manner.
Where did that come from? How long have you been saying that? And then what are the reasons for wanting to let go of that story? Why are you wanting the thing that you say you want? And then crafting and bringing out the identity of who's going to achieve that. This is something that I've really been diving deep into. And before I did my Ironman, like that is something that I had to cultivate. Before I trained, I didn't believe I was one. So I had to construct an idea of what an Ironman to me was, break down all the behaviors, and then create habits and routines around those behaviors so that by the time the race came, I was the identity. There was no imposter syndrome. It was something that I've earned, that I've sculpted, that I've created through the intentional action every day.
It's like, I think it's like Lao Tzu, The Art of War, whatever that guy is. I think he had some line about like the battle is won before it starts or something like that. Or the victor, something about the victor only chooses battles that are already won or something like that. So you almost have to become the person that you desire to be before you have proof that you are that person.
External validation, yes. Like it has to be an internal reference point for you.
So you decide, I'm going to be an Iron Man. You start training, etc., and then you're lining up to do your first ever Iron Man race, and you're feeling in your body like, I got this. I am an Iron Man. Game on.
Yes, the thing that I was feeling in my body. So I did the Ironman 70.3 in Santa Cruz. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's 1.2 mile swim, open water in the ocean. 56 mile bike ride, followed by a 13.1 mile run. And when I was on the beach with 1,800 other participants, I was looking around and there was not a moment of, I'm not going to finish. It was more of like a, holy crap, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe this is actually happening. Like, man, okay, how fast am I going to swim? Like how do I even enter the water? Like I wasn't freaking out to the point where I wanted to leave. I was freaking out more so of the excitement that I was actually going to be doing the thing that I've been thinking about for 5-6 months before.
Yeah. And doing something new that you've never done before as well. Right.
Exactly. And it was exhilarating.
I had that moment maybe it was last weekend. I did my first ever Spartan race.
Oh. Right?
And so they assign you your time, and it was 9:15. And so, 9:12, I go and I'm standing at the starting line in the mud and the rain, and I'm looking around at all these people thinking, okay, so this is the start of a Spartan race. All right. And you're watching the timer count down, and I'm kind of like, well, that hill looks pretty steep. Okay, well, sort of judging and comparing myself to other people, they don't look that crazy fit. I mean, if they're doing it, I could probably do it.
Right, right.
And then the thing starts, and then after a minute, it was just me and my thoughts. And I thought, okay, now the race has started. Right.
It
wasn't necessarily when the gun went off. It was sort of when my internal resistance switched on. Like, okay, all right. So this is what the actual race feels like.
Mm.
Did you experience any of that?
So I would say in a similar way of like going internal, there was not a part of the race where I was competing with anybody else except for myself. Like I was passing people mostly in the swim, and then I was passing most people on the bike, and there were a few that passed me, but when they passed me, it wasn't like I gotta pass them. It was like, good for you. Like, that's a really good pace. Man, you must have been doing this for a while. You must have been training really hard. Like, it was more of an appreciation and a gratitude rather than like a feeling of insecurity or less than or having to prove something. And I always checked in with myself of like, how am I feeling? Are you running your race? Are you feeling good? Where can you maybe push boundaries a little bit? Are you pushing the boundaries? And those are the types of conversations that I was having. And that's like the first time in my life where I wasn't relying on external motivation to drive me. I was solely and specifically relying on myself to make sure that I was living in integrity with me. Does that make sense?
And so what caused you to decide to do this? Are you just sitting around one day and...
Yeah, so my this starts like last year, November 2018. We had a Friendsgiving, and it was just when we invite clients and friends to get together and kind of just, go over what we're grateful for. And I was in this like little group, and we were talking about like things that we do to challenge ourselves. And one of the guys looks at me, he's like, James, you're a guy that always challenges yourself. What's next for you? And I'm like, well, physically, I feel like I haven't really been challenging myself since high school because I haven't really been training for anything. I've done a few half marathons, but nothing crazy. And they're like, you should do an Ironman. And I'm like, that's a lot of training. I have to like really get serious on what I eat, stretching. I have to like really get structured, and I just don't know if I'm ready for that. Like, my business is growing. I came up with all these excuses. And he's like, well, if you said you want a challenge, I mean, that's like a pretty big challenge. And so just do it. And he kind of like was forceful about it. And I'm like, fine. Yeah, I do it. And as soon as the words came out of my mouth, I'm like, shit. Because the way I am, like, once I say something, now I got to do it now. So I said it. I'm like, okay, how am I going to actually do this now? And then 6 months goes by, and I don't really, I train normal, like nothing crazy. And then like about 5 months out, I'm like, okay, it's time to get serious. I bought the tickets, and that's when I started really diving in. But that's how it started. It's like just out of that conversation.
And so when you said, okay, now I need to get serious about training, did you, read some blogs or hire a trainer or?
I didn't hire a trainer. Luckily, I had some really close friends who had done multiple full Ironmans. So I reached out to them, and I asked them for a lot of feedback and what they recommend, and then kind of was reading blogs and doing as much research on my own as I possibly could. And that's when I started really creating the identity behind who an Ironman is, and just utilized my resources. Looking back, it would have been a little easier if I had a coach, but I just felt like I needed to do it myself. That's kind of how I am sometimes. So that is how it kind of all worked out. But I'm also a firm believer in challenging yourself more than the challenge that you're going to face beforehand. So for example, that's why the 61-mile walk happened, is because I wanted a strong emotional like memory to draw upon in the event that I hit a wall in the Ironman that I had to overcome. So I'm like, what could I do that could really just shock myself on what I'm able to keep, like achieve, and then be able to reference that at any point in my run, swim, or bike. Mm. And then that's how the 61-mile walk came about.
And so then, okay, a 61-mile walk, which yeah. Someone's listening thinking, what's that?
The hell?
What are you talking about, yeah. James Silvis?
Yeah. Okay. So I was washing dishes one day and I was listening to the Aubrey Marcus podcast. And this is like, you know, funny things happen when you're like in the shower, going for a walk, washing dishes, things that you never think would happen. But I listened to this podcast. He was interviewing, what's his name? Mike Posner, the mm-hmm. artist for the sayings like Took a Pill in Ibiza, Think You're Cooler Than Me. And they were talking about something before Aubrey Marcus goes, so tell me about this walk across America. And like mid-dish, I was like, what did he just say? Did he just say walk across America? And Mike goes, yeah, man, I'm really excited. I'm taking a year off of like everything in my life to walk from the East Coast to the West Coast. And I'm like, what the hell? Are you serious? 1 year walking, like he's Forrest Gumping this. And Aubrey goes, why the hell are you doing that, man? and Mike goes, you know, it's just, I learned that before I got big, I thought success was all about getting the platinum record, getting the hits, making the money, getting the girls, all that. And then I got it and it wasn't what I thought. And it wasn't until I realized that the success is all a part of the journey, like it's more about the journey than the destination, that I started to shift things. And I wanted a strong metaphor in my life to be able to reference so that it would remind me of that. And so I thought about doing this walk. And so this walk is an example, a metaphor for me to value the journey, because that's all we got, rather than more than the destination. And he's like, if I think about all the miles that I got to walk, I'm probably not going to walk them. But if I think about just the next step and getting to the next destination of the state by state by state by state, then I'll have a much more positive chance or stronger chance of finishing. Mm-hmm. And he's still going like right now. Yeah. So I hear that and I'm like, holy crap, dude, I would never do that in my life. But how can I do that at some smaller level in Vegas? So then I start thinking, right? And I'm like, okay, huh, what can I do? And I start looking up mountain ranges. And I look up like Mount Charleston's like a local mountain range in Vegas. And it's like a 58-mile like hike from the beginning of like the getting to that mountain and then to the top of the mountain. And I'm like, okay, I could do that, 58 miles. Yeah, yeah, that's a good challenge. And the more I start thinking about it and the more I talk about it with other people, they're like, so are you going to invite other people to walk on this with you, or are you doing this by yourself? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I don't want to walk 58 miles by myself. I would rather walk with somebody. So then I changed it from walking up to a mountain to walking around Las Vegas, so that no matter where someone lived, they could join at any point of the walk. And then I started thinking, well, what else could I add to this walk that would make it more beneficial for everyone involved? So then I started offering one-on-one coaching for anyone that was interested. I started raising money for a nonprofit that serves the disadvantaged families in Las Vegas to, like, you know, create some funds for them. And so I had that idea and I'm like, I'm doing this. 3 weeks later, I ended up doing the walk, because that was like the last weekend before it got like seriously the hottest in Vegas. And so I only had 3 weeks to like train, if you want to say. And then I went through it, man. And 25 brave souls were out there with me walking for as long as they could. Some walked 30, most walked 10 to 20, but the experience of that is probably one of my most profound experiences in my life. And we could talk about it if you want, but like that, for that, for me, that is such a strong rooted memory in my mind.
I mean, when you say it's one of the most profound experiences in your life, I feel like that invites discussion, James. Like, I kind of want to know more about that. So,
all right.
And I know that you did it in one go. You kind of woke up early, started walking, and just kept on going until you'd done 61 miles. And I think it was 25 hours. Is that right?
25 hours and 30 minutes. The goal was 24 hours.
Yeah. So you didn't do it. So you got to do it again now.
Right.
No, but so man, like what did you learn? What did it teach you?
Okay. So here's everything. Yeah. Here's everything that I learned. And at any point you want to stop me and like go deeper into any lessons, like just let me know. Cause there's literally notebooks full of things that I've learned. First off, the first thing that I learned was when you present such a crazy idea to people, it really excites those crazy people that are always looking for something to do to like be on your side. So I remember having the idea and I walk up to my wife and I'm like, babe, I'm going to walk across Las Vegas. And she's like, what? I'm like, yeah, 61 miles. I'm thinking I'm going to do it in 24 hours. What do you think? She's like, you do you, boo. Like, whatever, you got it. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, this was probably one of the most excited I've ever been over idea. I get on Instagram and I'm like, guys, I have this crazy idea. I'm going to walk 61 miles in 24 hours around Las Vegas. Who's in? And I got more DMs than I thought. And there were people that said they were going that ended up flaking at the end. But it was a really cool moment for me to say, don't be afraid to share things that you think only you are crazy enough to do. Because people are out there wanting to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And this was an example of that. So fast forward 3 weeks, it's 2 a.m. I get to a local high school, which is where our starting point is. And we start the walk at 3. And there are 12 people on the walk that started at 3 a.m. And I broke the walk into 5 segments. So it was roughly like 10 to 12 miles before we had a break. And everything's going well. Like it's morning, it's not hot. Everyone's talking, everyone's connecting. And we finally get to the first spot and that's like 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, okay, how you guys feeling? Everyone's like, back's tightening up. You start to see a little change in physiology. We keep going. And we get to this point where we're overlooking the whole valley and you can literally see how far you have to go. It was in that moment I'm like, what the hell did I what did I sign up for? Like it was a 16 mile stretch to the next stop, the longest one of the walk. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh man. And this can be like, you can make this metaphor for anything of your life where you bite something off that you think you bite something off more than you can chew kind of thing, where you're like, man, I didn't think I could start that business. Or now that I'm in it, it's going to take that much work. Or I'm in this relationship now and they want me to talk about these things. Oh gosh. So like, that's the kind of feeling that I had in that moment. And what helped me was like looking down and just taking one step at a time. And I was like, James, you're the type of person that once you make a commitment, you have to see it through. So there's no stopping. But just take it slow. Do what you need to do. We get halfway downtown. It's 30 miles in and my body starts to shut down. Like my knees are starting to hurt. I'm icing. I'm like laying on the ground at one of these bars at downtown. Everyone's like, James, are you feeling good? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Okay. Just got to keep moving forward. Like I have to change up my pace of walk because the back of my knees are starting to hurt. And most of the people that started with me left halfway. So there's only one person that stayed and my parents showed up and they were kind enough to walk with me. But the most of the lessons didn't start until mile 40. And this was right around 7 p.m. Okay. And I'm like, okay. Now at this moment, you're taking inventory of how you're feeling physically, emotionally, psychologically. And you're like, okay, I'm feeling this amount of pain right now. And I know that I still have 9 hours left.
Yeah, you have like a third of the way to go.
Yeah.
Like I got another 20 miles. I have like another marathon almost.
Exactly. And so I'm like, okay, don't think that. Just one step at a time.
I love that.
Shut it off.
With
Shut
your brain.
Off.
Like, no, brain. No. Don't think that. Don't think that. That's bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so like that happened and my knees were starting to hurt. We were averaging probably 1.5 miles per hour. Like there were old people with canes that were probably walking faster than me at this point. And then I get to this moment and it's mile 56. This is the defining moment. This is the moment of all moments in my life. My life came down to this moment right here.
I feel like mile 56 would be like a program that you could launch, or like a tattoo or like a t-shirt of like mile 56. I'm like, what's that? And you're like, every time it would be mentioned, James, you would just be like, mile 56 was the moment of moments in my life.
Yeah, dude, you're so right. Okay. I should look into this.
Sorry. Okay. Mile 56, James.
Yes.
Let's go. What
happened? So it's 2:45 a.m. So we are 23 hours and 45 minutes into the walk. There's six people walking with me, okay? No cars on the road. It's just quiet. And all you hear is like pattering of like the feet, right? I'm taking inventory of my body. I'm looking around. I'm seeing everyone's faces. And I'm like, we're not going to finish in time. Like, we're not even at 56 miles yet. Like, we're at 55 and change. Mm. And I start thinking, I'm like, you know what? People are throwing up. People are like really in pain. My wife's blisters are popping in her shoes and it's starting to sting. People are like in this docile, like death stare at the ground, like zombies just walking. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, you know, if we're not going to hit in 24 hours, I mean, we should probably just call it. You know, I'm feeling it. Like, I'm done. And so at like 2:50, I call my mom and I'm like, Mom, I would just head over to the gas station where mile 56 was and just come pick us up, 'cause I think everyone's done and I'm feeling it. So yeah, I'll see you soon. So she's like, okay, I'll leave now. And my mom's so awesome. Like 3 o'clock in the morning, she's like, all right, let's do it. So then I get on Instagram and I'm like, all right, guys, look, first off, thank you so much for supporting me along this walk. It's been a journey. You guys have seen me through pain and everything. I just want to say thank you. I'm calling it early. You know, I didn't hit the goal, but hey, 56 miles, man, that's pretty crazy. Like trying to justify that 56 is okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then Brant, as we're crossing the street to get to the destination where 56 miles is, my body's like I'm living in the moment of me being in my bed as I'm crossing the street. I'm like, oh, almost there, almost there. We're almost done. I get to the end of the street and Brandon Collinsworth, you know, our friend, calls me. Now he's in Bali, different country, different time zone. And I see his number on my phone. I'm like, why is he calling?
You're like, hello? Shit. There's only.
Yeah. No. Like,
so Brandon Collinsworth is right like, he's an inspirational dude. He's a motivational coach. This is a dude who does hard things. Right. And I actually interviewed him on the podcast, one of the earlier episodes. If you're listening and want to check him out, but okay. So Brandon calls you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I imagine he doesn't say, hey, great job at 56, James. Well done.
Right. No, he goes, bro, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you can't stop. And I'm like, bro, you don't understand. Like I've done, like I hit my limits. Like I can barely walk. Like I can't even walk straight. My back is curved and I'm not even picking up my feet. My feet are just like gliding, like just gliding across the ground. Like I'm not even picking them up. And he goes, look, man, you've done with, I don't even know anyone who's ever done what you've done already. You've already done 56 miles and that is incredible. And no one's ever going to take that away from you. But here's the thing. I know you, and I know that these next 5 miles is going to build so much character to the point where this is going to be probably one of the best lessons that you'll ever learn. And I'm not saying that you have to do it because I know that you're probably experiencing a lot of pain. All I'm saying is that if you could find a way to do it, I don't think that you would regret it. And in a sense, like I'm paraphrasing, but that's like the gist. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm laying on my back on the sidewalk at the gas station. Like there's, if you go to my Instagram, you can scroll through my feed, you'll see this video. Like if someone were walking by me, they would think that I need like a paramedic. And I can't lift any part of my body, not even a finger. And I'm barely holding the phone up to my face. And I'm just agreeing with Brandon to get him off the phone because I'm just done at this point. And he's like, I love you, bro. Just, yeah, go for it. And I'm like, all right, man. Yeah, bye. And then there's a moment. This is the moment right here. I hang up the phone. And I'm like, James, you talk about mental toughness to all the people that you coach. You talk about finding something deep inside of yourself that you don't even know is there so that you can finish. You talk about rising above the challenge. You talk about finding a way no matter how impossible it seems. Are you really going to not finish and then possibly speak about this experience to a crowd and say you only did 56 out of 61? And I started bullying myself, bro. I was just like, are you being a hypocrite right now? You better get your ass up and finish this damn race, or else you never earn the right to speak about any mental toughness ever again. I don't care that you did 56. It's not about what you did up until this moment. It's about finishing. Finishing and honoring your commitment. You said that you would finish. Where's your action? Get up. Go. And that was literally like how I was talking to myself. I roll over like a 90-year-old man. I get up. I don't even stand all the way up. I get up and I'm like, oh, my back's convulsing. My legs are tightening. I walk up to my wife and I go, babe, you're not going to like what I'm about to say. She goes, what? I go, I got to finish. And it's like 3:05. And she goes, you could barely walk. Get in the car. And I'm like, I can't get in the car. My mom's like, James, get in the car. And everyone else on the ride's like looking at me with like pure shock. Like, you're not gonna finish. No, be safe. Like, your body, think about what you're putting your body through. This, think long term, James. Like, it's not, what are you trying to prove, right? Like, and I'm like, no, I have to finish. So I took my AirPods out, I put Eminem on, and I don't even run. I just move fast enough where the other leg has to get in front of the other leg so I don't fall. And then I just stumble the next 5 miles until the finish line, averaging an 11-minute mile pace. And I cross that finish line at 4:30 a.m. at the high school with the biggest sense of relief, pride, accomplishment that I've felt, man, in my life.
Damn.
And yeah, it was powerful, bro.
And how was the next day?
So I didn't really sleep because every movement hurt. But the next day was literally, I didn't do anything. I think I watched like Avengers when I got up and just like relaxed on the couch and just didn't move. But I felt good. Like, I didn't injure anything. I didn't pull any muscles. Like, I knew my limits. But it was just recovery. And after about 2.5 days, I was walking normal again.
And your mental state, I imagine, shifted though. When you 100%. Have time to reflect on what just happened, right? You give it some space and then you look back. Like, maybe your blisters heal or your soreness dissipates. Absolutely. And you're like, I did that damn thing. And now you have a TED Talk waiting to be given, man. I sometimes use that to myself.
I'm putting it out there. TED,
yeah.
Bring me on.
Seriously. I think that sometimes in my own life when I'm going through some stuff, I'm like, man, this is going to be like at least 4 Instagram posts, you know, this tragedy.
Mm.
Or, gosh, this breakup, this is going to be maybe an entire course or certainly a TED Talk.
Podcast episode for sure.
This is definitely going to, you know, maybe 2 chapters in the book I'm going to write one day. Like, but it's all a lesson, right?
Yeah. It is. The biggest thing like that I got though was the emotional space that I was able to hold. So when people give me excuses of like, I don't know if I can finish, I don't know if I could start that business, I don't know if I can have a relationship like that, I don't know if I can create life the way that you're talking about, James, I don't know if I could do this, and they don't have that like rock solid certainty, I passed memory into the current moment and directly like send it to the person that I'm certainty that I'm using from my past success. That was the biggest tactical thing that I got from that is like when I speak now, there's no doubt in my voice. There's absolute congruence because I'm referencing all these specific moments in my life where I'm doing the thing that I'm talking about. I'm not just hypothetically mentioning something that I read in a book. I'm referencing an experience, wisdom that I've received that I'm now directly transferring to you.
Mm.
It's huge for me.
And people can feel that on the other side. When you listen to somebody that has a tale of resilience and strength and overcoming, that is very powerful, certainly more powerful than somebody that has read a book about resilience and overcoming and is sharing with you some lessons that they took away from it. It's like you meet a dude that has walked 61 miles in a day, or you meet an Ironman athlete that has done it and faced the demons and come back to tell the tale. It's a very visceral experience, right? And people connect to that.
Yes. It's all about that emotion, you know?
Dude, and that 61-mile jaunt was the warm-up, right, for the Ironman, right?
Yeah, that's the warm-up for the Ironman, but that ended up being harder than the Ironman.
So the Ironman, you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, I finished. I was like, okay, I definitely have to do something bigger now, because I thought that the Ironman would be harder than the walk, but no. And so that's where I learned the strategy of doing something harder before you do something hard.
Mm.
Like, for example, I'm doing a marathon November 17th. So I'm running a marathon in higher elevation before I run the marathon, so that when the marathon comes, I get to enjoy it rather than stress about finishing it.
That's an interesting approach.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, man. Wow. Okay. So you've done the 61-mile race. You've done the Ironman. You're now going to run a marathon. Have mm-hmm. you set any similar kind of goals in other areas of your life in terms of pushing your edge or trying to attract yes. some newfound strength or identity?
Absolutely. Two things that come to mind. One is emotional, and I think one is all-encompassing. The emotional one is proactively seeking out therapy, whether that's coaching or like seeing a therapist. I'm a firm believer that we all need one, in the sense of someone being able to hold space for you so that you explore what you can't see. A lot of us get stuck in a bottle and we can't see what label is on the bottle, but someone who's outside can totally see who we are and what we are. And so by having that reference point from someone that doesn't really know you, that's removed from your family or your friendships, can really be an asset to you processing emotion or things that you don't even know are holding you back. So that's a way of stretching myself emotionally and just self-awareness wise. And then the other is traveling, you know, for example, like going on this retreat with Brandon, going to Peru and staying in the jungles, being completely disconnected from phone and media, and learning from indigenous people and eating off the land and exploring, you know, information from shamans, and like just immersing myself in a culture I have no idea how to live in, levels me up in gratitude and appreciation and perspective, and allows me to communicate with much more depth and much more perspective, so that I'm not so narrow-minded and I continue to remain open, if that makes sense.
Mm. And then has your experience doing these kind of physical endeavors affected your relationship with your wife at all? Like, because I imagine you've changed, right? You're now a Ironman 61-miler guy who goes and chats right, with shamans in Peru. And that maybe is different than who you were a year ago.
It's 100% accurate. And so going back to when I first met my wife, we met in college. I was in a fraternity. She was in a sorority. And I remember seeing her for the first time, and I just did the beeline over to her. And I'm like, hi, my name's James. Like, you're absolutely beautiful. I want to get to know you, in my mind. And then we started dating, and within 2 weeks, I felt something with her that I hadn't felt with any of my previous relationships. And I was like, I got to show you a place that only I know about. So are you open? Like, it's a mountain. I want to take you to it. And she's like, oh, okay. So we hike up this mountain 45 minutes. And this is a place that only I know about. I go up there to look out at the Las Vegas Strip, think about my life, think about the impact that I want to make. And I bring her up there with me. And we're sitting there overlooking Las Vegas. And I look over to her and I'm like, hey, there's something that you got to know about me. Which probably isn't the best line to open with, being that we're alone in a place that she can't escape from. But I'm like, there's something you got to know about me. Like, I value growth. Like, growth is the most important thing to me. And I got to know that if this relationship's going to work, that you value that too. Because I've been hurt in the past and I don't want to waste your time and I don't want you to waste my time. So I just need to know, like, do you value growth as much as I do? And this is 2 weeks into our relationship. And I sit there and I just wait. Like, I give her space. I kind of look the other way. And in my mind, I'm like, shit. Is that too much too soon? Like, dude, it's only been 2 weeks, man. And she looks back at me after what seemed like 3 hours. And she's like, I couldn't agree more. And that's when I knew that this relationship was different. So we founded our relationship on growth. So when I go out and I do these things like Ironman or 61 mile walk or going to Peru, my wife is super supportive in the fact that she knows that that's me. And what it does is I bring a new perspective to our relationship and it inspires her to do certain things. And then she, on her side, she's creative. She's loving. She is compassionate. Her mind and the way it works is like, I'm look at her sometimes, I'm like, damn, like you are so talented. And so she does things, she does the equivalent of Ironman in her own way that I look at and inspires me to be a better man. So we're both in our own lanes doing what excites us that we bring back to each other to share the lessons. And so it causes some ripples just because of how much commitment that thing takes. So we really have to be intentional with our conversations and we have to make sure that our boundaries and our standards are one, communicated and two, like enforced. Cause there's moments where, you know, I may bring work home or I may be too involved with training and not going on date night and giving her the love that she deserves. And so she has to voice that. And then there may be times where, you know, she's off in her space. I'm like, hey, we haven't done this in a while. Like, let's regroup, let's reconnect. And she's like, yeah, you're right. So we have to both, it's a pitch and catch of challenging each other and also being open to receiving feedback on how both of us can level up.
It's so good. And I think something that came up for me there was not necessarily comparing your endeavors to her endeavors. So for example, you training for an Ironman might be equally as challenging or confronting as her writing a blog post, right? Having a hard conversation with her mom, right? That might be her Ironman. And I think in my experience with relationships or working with clients as well, I've learned powerfully the impact of not necessarily comparing their pain or their pleasure or their goals to mine. Or other people's, because it's a, like, we're all running our own race, right? And so if somebody's listening, like, your Ironman might be go to the gym today, right? Or walk around the block, or, you know, put your swimsuit on and get in the ocean. If you're terrified of sharks, like, that might be your edge. That might be your laying on the sidewalk outside a dark Las Vegas gas station at 3 a.m. moment, right?
Right.
But what I do think is really important is that we each chase down those edges and we each discover what is waiting for us on the other side of those moments.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. And if you don't search for those edges, then the edges shrink in on you. Like, the room gets smaller when you don't push the boundary. It's like this big, you're this big expansive body that like can push out this box, right? And the more you push, the bigger the box gets. But if you stop pushing those limits and you just start accepting the playing not to lose mentality rather than playing to win, then it's like that box with gravity starts to shrink and starts to get smaller. And then your own self-worth, your identity, the person you think you are minimizes because you're not stretching. Which is really what you're designed to do. Like, we're all designed to grow. We're all designed to expand, to reach for more. Not that that defines us, but that's just an innate, I think, quality in all of us, is that desire to, what else can I do? Where else could I go? Yeah. So
I think that's one reason that traveling is so appealing, right? Is because everything is new. It's just an entirely stimulating experience. Every street you walk down, you've never seen it. Like, whoa, this is exciting. What's possible here? Or even just in your own neighborhood, you go to a restaurant that you've never eaten at. Like, you look at a new menu. I'm like, oh my God, there might be something on this menu that's my new favorite thing. Like, how exciting, you know, just the potential possibilities that surround us. And as you say, and I totally agree with this, if we don't necessarily push back or stretch ourselves, we start to, the way I almost pictured is like we solidify like a statue almost. And and our world becomes very small around us. And like on an airplane, when you're breathing that same air over and over again, and you just like feel stuffy and stagnant. And you're just like, I just got to get out of this plane. It kind of feels like that. And one thing I believe is that it's really uncomfortable to admit that, to accept that, to turn and face it, and to do something that you've never done before. Like, none of this is easy necessarily. But it gets easier because you get more and more used to doing the uncomfortable thing, is how I kind of look at it.
Yeah. And if you compare it to not doing it, I think the flip side is way more uncomfortable. Like living with knowing that you could have done something if you really decided to and you didn't. Like, so that's regret, right? And then also just the example that you'll be setting for your kids or your significant other or your friends or whoever that looks up to you. Like, there's that layer. And I don't want to be 50 in bed thinking about all the things that I wish I would have done. I would rather suffer on the front end of all the discipline and sacrifice and the non-sexy, consistent things that everyone is like, oh, you know, and do those now so that when I am 50, like, I have a whole brand new set of challenges that I can go after.
Yeah. It's the best. Like, it's the best. Just the collection of life experiences to me is just like way better than Pokemon. You know, it's like, oh, you've been cheated on? Like, oh, I've been cheating on. It's awesome. Yeah, I totally know what you're talking about now. Like, oh, my poster's walking across America. Like, I walked across Spain. Yeah, like walking across the country. It's bonkers. Like, oh, yeah. Like being on no sleep and wanting to cut your legs off because they hurt so much. Like, oh, yeah. I've done that.
Yeah.
I've done that too.
Yeah.
To me, it just feels like being as alive as possible. And it goes back to this idea of wholeness versus happiness, right? Of, yeah, you could chase only the one half of the spectrum of the goodies and the unicorns and the rainbows and whatnot. But like the real growth, like the real treasure, it's like it's in the dark cave in the middle of the night that nobody wants to enter, that's filled with all the scary things. And you go there and you come back, that's where the specialness lives.
Like, yes.
It's that. I'm like, man, you walked 61 miles in Vegas? I'm like, I've never done that. I want to do that now. I'm like, kind of like, okay, I want those epiphanies in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love that analogy, going to the dark cave. Like, it's like when I picture self-love or I picture self-acceptance or just like really just being okay with yourself, I picture, like you're saying, two spectrums, right? The nice, like, things that you're born with, the skills, the things that come easy to you. And then all the other things that you're like, that ain't me. Like,
yeah, I can't do that.
I'm not lazy. I'm not like, I don't get jealous. I'm not bitter. I'm not resentful. Like all those things that we like, I'm not going to look at that. When you go to that dark cave, so all that represents the dark cave, and you're like, you have like a match, or maybe you don't even have any light. You're just feeling around in that cave and you go all the way to the end. And you realize that you like break through the cave and on the other side is the light. It's like, it's this whole, it's like, man, how do I explain this? It's like it all collapses into one moment where you finally realize that you are light and you are dark and you're okay with both of them. Then you become so whole that you can't be destroyed. Like, no matter if someone tries to come at you with the dark or if someone tries to over deliver the light, you are indestructible because you've explored all those depths and you've accepted them. Mm. And because you've accepted both, now you get to choose which one you want to be rather than being told to be a certain way.
Yes, that. And it goes back to that sort of battle with the mindset that you were mentioning previously. When your brain is telling you one set of thoughts and you have the awareness to catch them, you're like, no, what's another way to look at this? You know, what's another story I can tell myself? Oh, this version over here that feels more powerful, more grateful, more loving, I'm going to choose that one. But it also reminded me of this riddle I think I heard when I was in elementary school, when I was a kid, and it was just something about how far can you walk into a dark forest? And the answer is halfway, because then you're walking out of the dark forest, right? And so you might be an hour away from getting out of that darkness forever. You might have spent, a day, a month, a year walking out of the dark forest, but because it feels the same as walking into the dark forest, you're feeling dejected, you feel like giving up, you feel like quitting. And I often use that motivation and just the idea that maybe exists. Like maybe tomorrow I'm out of this dark forest. Like maybe tomorrow my life changes entirely. Maybe tomorrow I get that job offer. I meet that dude on Instagram. Maybe tomorrow money just finds me and everything changes, right? And so I use this occasionally when I did that Spartan race, when I'm walking across Spain, like maybe something great is around the corner, and just trying to cultivate that like ferocious optimism or that strong curiosity of like, it might all change in just another 10 steps. I just need to get to the end of this street, right? Or just need to keep going a little bit longer. And I don't necessarily need to know how it all ends. I just need to know that it's possible that it ends differently than it is right now.
Yes.
Right?
Wow. I love that. That was great. Like,
thanks, man.
Wow. Yeah. Well said.
That was my little
It reminded
box.
Me. Yeah, no, that was good. It reminded me of Viktor Frankl's like Man's Search for Meaning.
Yeah.
With that the people who survive. Just... Yeah. That if you have not read that book, like go get that book.
Mm-hmm. There's actually, the book that I'm placing my tea on. Have you read this one? it's called
No.
The Choice, Embrace the Possible. It's a memoir by Dr. Edith Ava Eger. Dude, you got to read this book, man.
Yeah.
It's very similar messages and meanings to Man's Search for Meaning. Like, it's legit. So anyway, I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
The Choice. Yeah, I'm going to write that down. The Choice.
I mean, I have to bring it up because I'm literally resting my coffee on it right now so that I don't make loud noises on the table. Anyway.
It's all good. Yeah, no, that's 100%. But like the people who got out of the concentration camps were typically the ones who had envisioned a brighter future, even when they were suffering hypothermia, sleeping on the ground with urine and feces, only surviving off breadcrumbs, being whipped, beaten, seeing their friends and family die. Like even in the worst situations you can possibly think of a human going through, even in those moments, still choosing a brighter future. That hope is what keeps the human spirit alive. The moment that dies, or the moment you let it die, is probably a better way to say it, is the moment you have accepted playing small and you will not live the life that you're capable of.
Mm-hmm. Cultivate the spark.
Yeah, be the spark.
Be the spark. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's already there. It's, what was the line in that book of a man with any why can bear any how? Something like this. So if
I know that quote, and yeah, I don't know if it. I don't. It might be.
Anyway, so the idea is if you have a why, if you got a purpose, a mission, if you've got somebody in your life to live for, if you've got that why, then how you're living is irrelevant because you will get through it. You will survive. And I think that spark inside relates to the why. Like, why are you getting out of bed in the morning? Why are you happy to be alive? Why are you doing what you're doing? it sounds like you teach that a lot through your mindset coaching. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The why is very important. And especially the why and the intention, like the intention breeds the experience. It precedes what you notice. Intention guides your mind through the reticular activating system on what to pay attention to in your environment. So if my intention is to go into a networking event to build deep-rooted connections, then I'm going to be drawn to the people who also want that same thing. But if I go in there not having an intention, then I'm just going to meet superficially and kind of up in the air for what's going to happen. So I like to be intentional, because by being intentional, I'm being causative, not being at the effect of.
Mm.
So like there's cause and effect. I like to be causative so that I can create ripples that work best for everybody, or, you know, create win-win scenarios.
Yeah, man. Like you want to happen to life. Like you don't want life to happen to you, right?
Right.
You're going to go and make some shit happen.
Yeah. Like let's stir it up a little bit. Like I don't want to be at the bottom of the pot rotting away. Like I want to be in the spiral as you're spinning, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah. Get into it. So if there's somebody listening right now that's curious about how to start strengthening their mindset, that wants to actually implement some pragmatic steps of all the things that we've kind of touched on, do you have two or three kind of go-to exercises or journaling prompts or anything that you suggest?
Yeah, there's a couple. First thing that I would suggest is, so let me start with this one. When I was 24 years old, 23, 24, I was getting out of the Las Vegas industry. So I was working at Wet Republic, which is one of the biggest day clubs in the world, Las Vegas. I was a busser bringing people alcohol and serving ice and making sure they're having a good time. And at that point, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, except that I had a passion to speak and coach. My wife was working at a real estate company, and she was working for a guy that was, you know, big, successful man, making millions of dollars a year. He had a Christmas party, and I went with my wife and we had dinner there. And the guy goes, so James, what do you do for a living? And I didn't want to say that I'm a busser at Wet Republic, right? But this is also right around the time where, like, I knew I wanted to kind of get into this space of speaking and coaching. So I'm a big believer in speaking something into existence before it happens. So I go, well, you know, I'm a coach, I'm a speaker and a coach, and I help people, you know, break through limitations, motivate them to do more. And my pitch was terrible because it was new then. And he's like, oh, that's great. Who have you worked with? I'm like, damn it. Well, luckily I had spoken to the staff at Wet Republic for the whole entire season, motivating the staff every Friday before our pre-shifts, which was pretty cool because that's never been done before. And so I referenced that. And then I also said, and, you know, I work at Wet Republic, and I work with them on, like, motivating them. And then I've also spoken to an 8th grade graduation class, and that was cool, which was true. So those are the only two things that I had. Mm-hmm. But he's like, well, what I really want to do is get into corporate and work with teams like yours. And he goes, oh, okay. How much do you charge? I'm like, damn it, dude. Like, I didn't think this far. And I don't want to say something too high where I offend him. And I also want to say something too low where I shoot myself in the foot. So I'm like, $100. And he goes, oh, for how long? And I'm like, 15 minutes. And he goes, what's your schedule like next week? And I'm like, open. And he goes, cool. Come in and talk to my team next Friday. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, what? Oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Absolutely. I'll put you in my calendar right now. Yeah, sounds good. I'll see you then. So the day comes, I pull into the parking lot. I'm freaking out. Like, imposter syndrome to the max. I'm like, this guy's going to figure me out. He's going to know that I've been, like, busted. I don't know what I'm talking about. Oh my gosh, I can't go in there. I'm sitting in my car. And then I pull out. I remember that this is probably one of the greatest things that I've done for myself. I remember writing down a list of all the things that I was proud of that I've done in my life, like benching a certain weight, making the football team, you know, all these things in my life at that time, 24. And so I pulled up the notes portion of my phone. I just started reading them. And as I was reading them, I put on a favorite song of mine And that, so I had my favorite song that elicited some emotion. And then I was reading all the things that I've done that I was proud of. And I call that a confidence catalog. And what that did is it gave me just enough confidence to get out of the door, out of the car, walk through the door. Once I was there, I was committed. I give the 15-minute presentation. And as I'm finishing up, I was like, thank you for your time. I appreciate you guys. And I hope you have a great day. And I stopped talking. And he has his arms folded, leaning back in the chair, almost like the stature of if he had his feet on top of his desk kind of thing. And he's just looking at me in the eyes. And I can't tell if this is positive or negative. Like, I'm like, okay, so like, what is it good? Like, I don't know, man. Like, tell me. He goes, wow. Wow. That was the best presentation I've ever heard. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, is this really happening? And then he looks to his whole staff and he goes, if you don't listen to everything that he said and you don't implement it, you no longer work for me. He goes, everything he said is absolute truth. James, thank you for your time. You need to charge more. You're worth every penny. Your check's at the front desk. Thank you for your time. And I walked out of there and I was like, what? Yes, right? So the first thing that I would have people do is write that out. Like, what is your confidence catalog? Like, what are the moments in your life that you can go back to and reference when you need to pick yourself up out of the dumps? That is like my first thing. Because if you don't have enough confidence to say yes or to say no or to take advantage of an opportunity when it arises, then we can't form any plan. Mm. So you need just enough to get you there. So that's one of the first things that I would say.
Mm. And then just to add to that briefly,
yeah,
I feel like once you're there, all you have to do is not die. Like, right. Like you just have to not die. Giving the pitch, giving the talk, having the conversation, whatever. Like, that's your job. Just get it right down to that. And then the other thing that I am attracted to is this idea that imposter syndrome is like a breadcrumb on the path to where you're supposed to be. Like, the more that you can feel like a total and complete imposter, to me, that is a big sign that you're growing. Like, you're doing something different. You're challenging yourself. You're pushing your boundaries. Like, you're doing it. So I think imposter syndrome is actually a beautiful thing to experience.
Yeah. Okay. And that's like when you know you need to lean into it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm feeling like I'm not qualified for this. That's why you need to do it.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah. 100%.
Okay. So confidence catalog is one.
Confidence catalog. Another thing that I would build, and this is like a reference point, this is kind of borrowing off of Todd Herman's work and just this theory of in psychology called enclosed cognition. This is actual data where people who wear certain clothing feel different based off what they're wearing. So like if someone wears a suit, they might feel stronger or sharper or, you know, more professional. If someone's wearing like colorful clothing, they might be more creative. And if you do your own research, you'll find that this is fascinating, what the studies that they've been able to do. But I would almost create an alter ego for different areas of your life. And you can also trace this back to like Carl Jung and his work with owning the king, the warrior, the lover, the magician in you, and being specific on who needs to show up in what areas of your life. So like if you're a business owner, Who's the identity around the business owner? Who is that for you? Like what parts of you need to be there for you to thrive in that environment? And then in your relationships, who do you need to be? What kind of lover do you need to be? What kind of a mindset needs to go into you showing up for your significant other the way that you want to have that relationship thrive? So creating like this alter ego and stepping into it before and creating a ceremony almost around before you go into the actual experience so that you can bring intentional with the moment that you're going to be stepping into. So that'd be like the second thing. And then the third thing would be find people in your corner that will remind you of your greatness. And I don't care if you got to like join a mastermind, if you got to just get a coach that believes in you, you got to go see a therapist, but you need someone in preferably two or three people, so you get different perspectives. But you need those people to be in your corner, to sharpen you, to collaborate with, to push you when you need it, and to pull you up when you need it. And I think that those three things would be really easy ways to get started on building some momentum in the right direction.
Mm. Love that, man. Solid advice. Any final words of wisdom before we leave this chat, or where can people find you?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram. My handle is James_Silvas, S-I-L-V-A-S. I'm sure you'll put it in the show notes as well. Mm-hmm. And then I do have a podcast as well, all about being that 1%. That's my brand. So the podcast is Be That 1%. Just type that in iTunes, you'll find it. And you're going to be on the show next week too. So super excited about that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how you can reach me. You'll find all my email. You can shoot me a DM, whatever. But as far as last words go, you just need to understand that you are one. The moment you take responsibility for your life and you stop blaming, shifting responsibility, or pushing things that you know you need to do to the future, that's when you truly start owning your magic. And you would be so surprised as to what shows up in your life when you start to do that type of work. Your relationships will change almost overnight. The opportunities that you get and the people that will reach out to you, you'll almost be like, is this real life? Like, in the last 60 days, man, I can't tell you how much quote unquote magic has happened in my life, from like connections with you to opportunities to lead retreats, speak on stages, go to certain events. Like, it's all happening because I'm opening up myself even more. And because I'm doing that, I'm able to serve at higher levels and continue to elevate myself and hopefully those that I encounter and interact with.
Mm. I love that, man. I think radical personal responsibility is the magical elixir. Like, if you want to start somewhere with changing your life, you just take a little teaspoon of that. Like they say in Australia, a teaspoon of concrete, just like get that in your gut. Like, and as you say, magic will just find you in the oddest and wildest and weirdest ways. Yeah. Brother, you are such a gem. Thank you, man, for sharing your big heart and soul with us today. Just so impressed by you and how you push your limits and that you're sharing it all in such an authentic, open-hearted way, man. It's a real inspiring life that you're living. So thank you for that. Thank you for your time. And if you're listening to this, go and follow this dude. He is the real deal. He'll make your life better. James Silvas.
Thank you, man.
Look forward to chatting on your podcast next week.
Right.
We'll do this again.
Yeah, dude, thank you. Thank you for all your work and all you do to continue to inspire all those listening and myself included. I appreciate you.
Yeah, brother. All right. We did it.
Boom.
Ooh-wee. James Silvas. What an interesting character this man is, isn't he? Prepared for an Ironman by walking 61 miles around Las Vegas. Nearly destroyed himself to train. So many lessons in that. I appreciate you listening, and I do think that this might be one of those episodes to flag and listen to again, because there's so much wisdom in this man's brain. There's so many little sound bites and quips and ideas that came across in this episode. If you can think of somebody in your life that could use this knowledge, this information, these insights, please do pass it along. If you'd like to share it on the social media, on the Instagram, please do. Go ahead and do that. If you want to leave me a 5-star rating, I would not be opposed to that. Please do. Every little bit helps. I'm trying to make a more positive impact on this planet. You spreading the word and promoting makes a big difference in helping me to get that job done. And so I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you sincerely for being a part of this mission. And yeah, I just think you're great. I really adore you. What else? Oh, I was interviewed by James on his podcast, which is called Be That 1%. Earlier this week. So stay tuned for that episode. It should be out in about a week or two. We flipped the script. He got to ask the questions and I got to rant and rave about all the things. It was a really fun chat. I really adore this dude. He's a good man, lots of good ideas. So That's it from me. Keep kicking ass, and I'll see you, or you'll hear from me. You'll hear my voice in another couple days. Got another couple good episodes lined up that I think you're really going to love. So stay tuned. And I love you. You're amazing. You're wonderful. The world is better with you in it, and don't you dare forget it.